we have prevented the imposition of a communist government by force upon the people of South Korea. The details of problem areas, the provisions of the agreement require an accounting for all missing in action into account, the provisions with regard to Laos and Cambodia, and the provisions prohibiting infiltration from North Vietnam into South Vietnam have not been complied with. We have and will continue to comply with the agreement. We shall insist that North Vietnam comply with the agreement. The leaders of North Vietnam should have no doubt as to the consequences if they fail to comply with the agreement. But despite these difficulties, we can be proud of the fact that we have achieved our goal of obtaining an agreement which provides peace with honor. On this day, let us honor those who made this peace, who made this achievement possible, those who sacrificed their lives, those who were disabled, those who have made every one of us proud to be American as they return from years of combat, and every one of the 2.5 million Americans who have served honorably in the nation's longest war. Never have men served with greater devotion abroad with less Let us provide these men with the veterans' benefits and the opportunities they have earned. Let us honor them with the respect they deserve. And I say again tonight, let us not dishonor those who serve their country by granting amnesty to those who deserve it. Tonight, I want to express appreciation of the nation to others who helped make this day possible. I refer to you, the great majority of Americans listen to you tonight. It's food. Despite an unprecedented barrage of criticism from a small but vocal minority, stood firm for peace with honor. I know it was not easy for you to do so. We have been through some difficult times together. I recall the time in November 1969 when hundreds of thousands of protesters marched on the way. The time in April 1970 when I found it necessary to order the destruction of communist bases in Cambodia. The time in May 1972 when I ordered the landing of Haiphong airstrikes on military targets in North Vietnam in order to stop a massive communist invasion of South Vietnam. And then perhaps the hardest decision I have had to make is present, on December 18, 1970, when our hopes for peace were so high, when the North Vietnamese stonewalled us at the time, I found it necessary to order more airstrikes in military targets in North Vietnam to break that deadline. On each of these occasions, the voices of opposition we heard in Washington were so loud, they at times appeared to be the majority. But across America, the overwhelming majority stood firm against those who advocated peace at any price, even if the price was so high, even if the price would have been defeat and humiliation of the United States. Because you stood firm for doing what was right, Colonel McKnight was able to savor his fall field of his when he returned home. Thank you for bringing us home on our feet, rather than on our knees, instead of on our knees. We'll turn now to some of our problems at home. Tonight I ask your support in another battle. We can be thankful that this is not a battle of war, but a battle we must win if we are to build a new prosperity without war, without inflation at home. What I refer to as the battle of the budget, not just the battle of the federal budget, but even more important, the battle of your battle. Family budget of every home in America. One of the most terrible costs of war is inflation. The cost of living has skyrocketed in every war in which we've engaged. We recognized this danger 4 years ago and have taken strong action to deal with it. As a result of our policies, we have cut the rate of inflation in half since it reached its peak in 1969 and 1970. Today, our rate of inflation is the lowest of any major industrial nation in the world. But these positive statistics are small comfort to a family trying to make both ends meet. And they are no comfort at all to the housewife who goes to the market and finds meat prices soaring higher and higher. The major weak spot in our fight against inflation is in the area of meat prices. I have taken action to increase imports abroad and from abroad and production at home. This will increase the supply of meat in the months ahead and will help bring down prices later this year. But what we need is action that will stop the rise of meat. necessary to do the job. Beef prices must not go higher. With the help of the housewife, farmers, they can and should go down. This ceiling will help in our battle against inflation, but it is not a permanent condition. We must act on all fronts. Here is where the federal plan comes in. I submitted to Congress for the next fiscal year the largest budget in our history, $268 billion. The amount I have requested in this budget for domestic programs in such fields as health, housing, education, aid to the elderly, the handicapped, and the poor is twice as big as the amount it was in my first budget 4 years ago. However, some members of Congress believe the budget in these areas should be even higher. If I were to approve the increases in my budget that have been proposed in the Congress, it would mean a 15% increase in your taxes or an increase in your prices. That is why I shall veto the bills which would break the federal budget, which I have spent on. Because if I do not veto these bills, increased prices or taxes would break the family budget of millions of Americans. This is not a battle between Congress and the President. It is your battle. It is your money, your prices, your taxes. My years ago as a freshman congressman, I met President Truman in the summer. I remember he had a sign on his desk. It read, "The buck stops here." That meant, of course, the president can't pass the buck on to anyone else when a tough decision has been made. It also means that your buck stops here. If I do not act to stop the spending increases which Congress sends to my desk, you will have to pay the bill. I admit that there's an honest difference within Congress. If you're willing to pay the higher taxes or prices, it will result if we increase federal spending over the amount that I recommend. As some in Congress have proposed, you should ask your senators and your congressmen to override my veto. But if you want to stop the rise in taxes and prices, then I have a suggestion. I remember when I was a congressman in the Senate, I always seemed to hear from those who wanted government to spend more. I seldom heard from the people who have to pay the bill, the taxpayer. If your congressman or senator has the courage to go against more spending so that you won't have to pay higher taxes or pay, then let him know your support. Winning the battle to hold down the federal budget is essential if we are to achieve our goal of improved prosperity without war and without abuse. I ask tonight for your support. Helping to win this vital important battle. Let me turn finally to another great challenge. As we end America's longest war, let us resolve that we shall not lose the peace. During the past year, we have made great progress for our goal of a generation of peace for American children. The war in Vietnam has been ended. After 20 years of hostility and confrontation, we have opened a constructive new relationship with the People's Republic of China, where one fourth of all the people who were over. We negotiated last year with the Soviet Union a number of important agreements, including an agreement which makes a major step in linking Libya with Iran. There are some who say that if we do all this progress toward peace, why not cut our defense budget? Let's look at the facts. Our defense budget today takes the lowest percentage of our gross national product in 20 years. There's nothing I would like better than to be able to reduce it further. But we must never forget that we would not have made the progress toward lasting peace that we have made in the past year unless we had the military strength that had commanded, that had the military strength that commanded respect. This year, we began to do a new negotiation with the Soviet Union for further limitations on nuclear arms. We should be participating later in the year in negotiations for mutual reduction of forces in Europe. If prior to these negotiations, we unilaterally reduce our defense or reduce our forces in Europe, any chance for successful negotiations for a mutual reduction of forces or limitation of arms will be destroyed. There's one indispensable rule of international diplomacy. You can't get something in a negotiation unless you have something to give. If we cut our defenses before negotiations begin, any incentive for other nations to cut theirs will go right off the window. If the United States reduces its defenses and others do not, it increases the danger of war. Only a mutual reduction of forces will reduce the danger of war. We must maintain our strength until we get agreements under which day should ever come. The chances for building a new structure of peace in the world would be irreparably damaged, and free nations everywhere would be living in mortal danger. A strong United States is not a threat to peace. It is the free world's indispensable guardian of peace and freedom. I ask for your support tonight, therefore, for keeping the strength which enabled us to make such great progress toward world peace in the past year, and which is indispensable as we continue our bold new initiatives to peace and to give this man. As we consider some of our problems tonight, let us never forget how fortunate we are to be living in America at this time. We have ended the longest and most difficult war in our history in a way to maintain the trust of our allies. We are the strongest and most prosperous nation in the world. Because of our strength, America has the magnificent opportunity to play the leading role of bringing down the walls of hostility that divide nations and people of the world, in reducing the burden of armaments in the world, of building a structure of lasting peace in the world. And because of our wealth, we have the means to move forward at home and exciting new programs for progress, which will provide better environment, education, housing, and health care for all Americans, and which will enable us to be more generous to the poor, the elderly, the disabled, the disadvantaged, any nation in history. These are goals worthy of a great people. Let us, therefore, put aside those honest differences about the war which have divided us, and dedicate ourselves to meet the great challenges of peace. But as we do, let us not overlook the third element, more important even than military, monetary, economic power, which is essential for greatness of a nation. We are strewn with the wreckage of nations, which fell by the wayside at the height of their strength and wealth, because their people became weak, soft, and self-indulgent, and lost the character and spirit which had led to their greatness. As I speak, you and I have had confidence that this will not happen to America. My confidence has been increased for the fact that a war which cost America so much in lives, money, and division at home has, as it ended, provided an opportunity for millions of Americans to see again the spirit and character which made America the great nation. A few days ago, this room, I talked to a man who had spent almost 8 years in a communist prison cell in Argentina. For over 4 years, he was in solitary confinement. During those 4 years, he never talked to a single person except his family. He had only two meals a day, a piece of bread, a little vegetable, and some vegetable soup. He lived on two meals a day, a piece of bread, usually a piece of bread, some vegetable soup. All he was given to read was communist propaganda. All he could hear and read was communist propaganda. I asked him how he was able to survive in common standing tall, proud, saluting the American flag. He paused a long time before he answered. And then he said, "It isn't easy for me to answer. I'm not very good at words. But all I can say is faith in God. Man who has suffered, men who have suffered so much for America, can have such faith. Let us, who have received so much for America, renew our faith. Our faith in God, our faith in America, and our faith in ourselves. If we meet the great challenges of peace that lie ahead, with this kind of faith, we will be ready to